Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in the enigmatic, dark, cellar-like Johnston proper. Hey,
there's where somebody used to be.
here once stood a man, John Bouva. Dude, I don't think of stuff in time. I really thought that we should have had a mask made. I don't know where you can have a mask made. Like, is it only Hollywood style that make masks? No, if you want, like, a legit mask, can you get that done around here?
I think you got to find criminals.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I don't think it's around here.
Yeah,
unless it's
only criminals.
Suspect intentions.
Yeah, yeah, they're really good at the straight colors without any facial features, but I think they could probably.
So, like, if I wanted to get a John Bouva face,
ooh,
I couldn't do it in, say, the tri-state area.
I don't think
I'm
so.
Say no.
Dang. Here's the deal: if you are a face maker, you let me know. info@lifefromthepath.org.
Yeah,
I need your rock bottom price. All right, I mean, I don't have free money to be buying a face.
No.
But I'd like to make a John Bouva.
We'll throw you business. Absolutely.
But I want him with a mustache, and I want to call him Don Bouva, and I want to wear him.
Okay. All right.
That's what I want done. So if you make faces, you let me know. info@lifefromthepath.org. I mean, rock bottom prices. I mean, two digits.
Listen, if you cut us a good deal, anybody that asks us to have a face made, we'll send them your way.
Yeah, that's a
good
guarantee.
You'll be our exclusive face making business.
Yeah, I think that's going to work. Here we go. Here's what we got on the show tonight. First of all, John Wagner's in the studio. Hey, John.
What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah, very well. It's good to see John again. John has been, he has been on the show before, and I mean, he was excellent.
Yeah.
No. Like five stars. I do like three. Definitely.
Yeah, that's probably normal.
A strong three.
Yeah. Actually, the only reason he didn't come on the next week is because he tried to change the name of the show to John Wagner Show, and we had to give it time to cool down a little bit.
Yeah. Anyway, so John's on. He's going to be providing thoughts for the day, general commentary, things of this nature. He's also a mean origamist.
Oh, I'll be making some crazy origami.
But I mean, it's a radio program, and we just don't do that stuff.
It's not functional.
So anyway, I mean, you'd have to call him at home or something. He's up late. Stuff we're talking about tonight. I saw this article on CNN Belief Blog, 5 Things You Didn't Know About Jesus. And I thought, that's a kind of a pompous thing to say. What do you know what I know about Jesus? So anyway, we're going to walk through them and see if you knew them about Jesus. And it's hard to be mad at the guy, though. He's got the white collar and stuff, and he's smiling. Like ear to ear. I mean, he looks like he's having a good time when he's writing it. You know, you didn't know number
four. Like he's really doing the revelation. He's telling you everything you ever wanted to know.
As a matter of fact, this whole show is stuff you didn't know. So 5 things you didn't know about Jesus. 2, stuff you didn't know about how modern folks read the Bible. Interesting survey about how people read the Bible, what translation they read. I just thought some of this stuff was interesting, and we'll see how it strikes you. All right. We might get to some stuff that you didn't know about St. Patrick. Because today is St. Patty's Day if you're listening to the live show.
Yeah.
And stuff you didn't know about why pastors leave the pulpit. There's a website called expastors.com, and they got an interesting article there about why pastors leave the pulpit. And it's not just interesting for, like, pastors. There's millions of people that attend church. And think of the guy that gets up there and speaks and goes to the hospital, does funerals and weddings. Something about his situation has caused that guy to leave. And I feel like that's an interesting question, is what has caused that guy to stop, say, go doing funerals, stop preaching, stop doing weddings? What's drawing that guy away from that? So some of these things are pretty interesting, so I want to kind of talk through that. Also, we'll do some advice on Dear Life and the Path. And Mike, you said you got some Pope style?
I got a little bit of Pope style. It hits kind of close to home this week. So.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Mike was talking just before the show started about the massive uptick in Facebook quizzes that show like a character.
Yeah.
So a character of somebody is, right?
Yeah. It seems like, especially it was like the last week or 2 weeks ago, it really hit its fulcrum. But everybody was like, hey, I'm this character from this B movie from the 80s, based on this quiz I took. Or, if I was a left shoe or right shoe, it turns out I'd be a right shoe because of these reasons. And I'm like, are we so hard up to define ourselves that we're willing to latch on to, I mean, literally anything. Like, what character are you from Teen Wolf? I mean, if you're not Teen Wolf, you're lame. The movie's called Teen Wolf. Everybody should want to be the main character.
Yeah, right. You don't want to be the B Teen Wolf.
I was the guy that got killed in the second scene. Well, that's disappointing.
You know, and people tend to, so when they get their character, then they start like defending it. Like, that's the best one. It's like, you know, I didn't want to be Scooby-Doo. Velma's the best. Absolutely. Always has been the best.
Yeah, what do you mean I should live in Wisconsin? I hate Wisconsin. I mean, you really, like, you're going to take five questions, they're going to tell you what state you should, and that's the thing, is the title of the quiz is not like, what state would you probably like to be in? It's always like, what state should you be in? What character should you be? What kind of parent are you? You know what I'm saying? They're like, definitive. Like, after these five questions, we will know you to your soul. And like, I took one. Cool, here's the deal.
Here it comes.
You
here
sucker. Comes.
These are worthless. You should not be doing them. You have no purpose in your life. You take them.
I did
one.
I did. But see, unlike everybody else, I don't ever post the results to Facebook. I'm just interested to see what this website thinks of me. And like, I got suckered into the parent one.
I'm interested to know what this faceless code of a website interprets me as a person.
I feel like they're sizing me up, and I just want to know who am I against. So anyway, I took that, and they suckered me in on the parent thing. Well, what kind of parent are you? I'm like, I don't see handsome and cool, but I guess we'll see what happens, you know? And they called me a helicopter parent. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hover over my kids and whatever, watch them all the time. I thought, this could not be any more wrong. Like, I mean, there's times when I'm like a fly trap on them ladies because they'd be causing the trouble. But like, most of the time, you know, if they want to wear a crown, a pair of shorts, and the galoshes out and about, you know, I don't care. I don't see that as being any big deal. And so after that, I decided I'd start checking them out without actually taking them. And they were just totally random. You know, what song defines you? That'll help us tell you what state you were supposed to live in. You know, it turns out it's North Carolina, you know, because you picked some kind of old Beach Boys tune. I don't know. It just seems ridiculous, you know, like it just people grasping, like, define me. Tell me who I am. Who am I supposed to be? I don't understand what's going on. And I thought, I mean, on a more serious level, I'm like, you know, it's going to sound really cliche of me, right? But like, your maker defines you. God made you. God tells you who you are. God nurtures you and who you're supposed to be. And like, you spend your whole life searching for who you are or what you were supposed to be instead of ignoring, you know, and just ignoring what God designed you to be and meant you to be. And like, I don't know, it just seemed like I could just as easily fall into that trap as anybody else. But like, it just seemed to be, I don't know, coming to a pinnacle, you know, on social media here lately.
I think I took it a different direction. I see all those go by all the time on my Facebook feed. And when it comes by once for one person, I see yours pop up. I'm like, oh, that was probably fun. You were probably bored. That was funny. You wanted to see what you were. But when the same person has 19 of them in a row, like I was Fonzie, I was, you know, Baba Bear, you know, I was Kermit the Frog. You're just like, do you have nothing else to do?
Right, literally nothing.
Are you just sitting there with nothing? Because I have things you can do.
Like, you know what? I have a list.
Come find me. Come to my office. I will give you things you can do. They might even be kingdom-oriented. It'll be great for both of us. Yeah, but sometimes those things are fun. You do some mindless stuff for a minute, but when you do it 34 times in a row to see if you can get a new answer.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. And like, you know, we haven't really touched on this topic a whole lot, but like, I'm starting to fear social media more and more because it's attractiveness. Right? Like, I get sucked into it just as fast as anybody else.
Yep.
And I spend more time not interacting with it, but just creeping on it. You know, what do you do? What's going on? You know? And then I'm like, why would you even write that on Facebook? Well, here's the deal. If I wasn't creeping on you, I wouldn't even know you wrote it, right? So I'm half guilty on this thing. But like, I don't know. People just get drawn into this, like, this alternate version of you because the input of who people see you are is totally based on you, right? And like, that gives me every excuse to lie about me.
You know, oh, sure.
And once you start doing it, it starts to cross over into your actual life, and then like you pretty much build a persona of somebody that you are not. You are honestly not that. Now, I mean, am I expecting you to roll up onto Facebook and be like, I totally lost my temper and I did terrible things and I really said mean stuff to my wife? I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Like, post at 9:10. But like, yeah, no one's gonna do that. But like, on the other hand, it just starts to be a way of life where it's nothing but phony, and then all of a sudden, you're a big fat phony. Right. Like, that's really all you are. And then you start taking quizzes to figure out who you are because you lost your real self in your phoniness.
Yeah. Hands up, I spend way too much time on the Facebook mobile app. I pull up my phone, check my work email, check the Facebook feed. So that's one hypocrite right here. But at the same time, you know, Facebook, like, you got to. You only post things. Most people only post positive things about themselves.
Yep.
And so when you go out and read it, it's really easy to feel down if you're not in a good space about yourself.
That's true.
You know, and you get yourself into a rut because look how great everybody else's life is.
Right.
They're posting, they're on vacation, they got a new job, look at their puppy. Oh, they're Scooby-Doo in the cartoon.
Yeah.
So I think it's dangerous for folks who maybe aren't comfortable with who they are or in a bad spot or who don't have a way or don't have a purpose themselves, because then they go out there and see only perfect things about other people.
That's right.
You're not
listening. And you know that's things. Not honest, right? Yeah. But like, I mean, when you're from a certain place, it still hits you. Yeah. I mean, for a fact, not everybody's life isn't shining gold, but like, you're still like, well, it just looks better than me. I'll tell you that. You know, it looks like they got some stuff going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying it's bad or it's the devil's work or anything. I'm just saying like, I know that I cross the line on that thing. And like, I always promise myself I'm going to fast that Facebook. You know, I'm going to get off it for a while. And like, I've never committed to doing it. Like, this is the week. I know I should. I just never quite do it, which means I'm addicted to it and it needs to go, you know. But like, to a certain extent, I just know that if you take the 5 minutes I look at it, you know, every 2 hours, you know what? I mean, we're talking a half hour away from my kids. You know, we're talking about half. Oh, yeah. We're talking a half hour away from my work, half hour away from my wife. You know, I mean, these are people that honestly care about me, invest back in me. These are people that love me and that I should be loving back. And I'm looking at, you know, people from high school that, I mean, literally, I didn't even know them. I had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
And they may have shoved me into a locker one time and now we're buddies 10 years later. But I mean, I have no investment in them. They don't even know me. And I'm spending more time looking to see what they might have done last night than, you know, talking to my kid. It's just, I find it embarrassing for me. Like for me, it's embarrassing and it just needs to curb a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I have not taken a quiz. I was actually looking for one to see if I could take one real quick and see if I could be Scooby-Doo.
You would be Don Quixote.
Oh, man.
Unfortunately.
Wait, is that the...
It's a movie.
No, it's a book.
It's a Western
movie. Don Quixote. I was thinking of the cartoon character. Hold on there.
It's Hong Kong Fooey.
Quick Draw McGraw.
Oh, okay.
Hold on there. And then the dog that eats the biscuit. You know what I'm talking about? Is that the same dog? Ah, shoot. Never mind. I've outed myself.
I wish I had stayed home.
I didn't say anything for like 5 minutes, and then I ended up saying that. You know what I'm saying? I stored up all my goodwill, and that's what came out of my mouth five minutes later.
That's unfortunate.
What a bummer. Five things you didn't know about Jesus. CNN Belief Blog. Here we go. Okay, number one, Jesus came from a nowhere little town. How big was Nazareth? Any idea?
500 people.
Population?
500.
Wagner?
750.
Ooh, Wagner's going up. Nearly all modern-day archaeologists agree the town of Nazareth had only 200 to 400 people.
Ooh.
Jesus' hometown is mentioned nowhere in either the Old Testament or the Talmud, which notes dozens of other towns in the area. In fact, in the New Testament, it is literally a joke. In the Gospel of John, a man named Nathanael hears the Messiah is Jesus Nazareth. He says, can anything good come from Nazareth?
That's right.
That's right. So that was number one. Number two, Jesus probably didn't know everything. An interesting suggestion. Ooh. He says, this is a thorny theological question. If Jesus is divine, wouldn't he know all things? Indeed, on several occasions, Jesus predicts his death and resurrection. On the other hand, if he had a human consciousness, he needed to be taught something before he could know it. The Gospel of Luke says that when Jesus was a young man, he progressed in wisdom. That means he learned things. Otherwise, how would he progress? Second example, I think I'm going to take some serious issue with. In the Gospel of Mark, Jesus initially refuses to heal the daughter of a non-Jewish woman, saying rather sharply, it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs, describing the Gentile. But when she replies that even the dogs get the crumbs from the table, Jesus softens and he heals her daughter. He seems to be learning that his ministry extends beyond the Jewish people. I just don't agree with that interpretation of that. I feel like his answer was for his disciples who were thinking that. But not that not being what he was thinking. I don't think he was like, you know what? Touche, Gentile woman. Here you go.
Yeah. I guess I always read it with the inflection like, you know, is it wrong, blah, 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 to give it to the dogs? Like he read it as an inquisitive, you know, that you know this is where our stance is.
That's not a question, though. He's saying it firm. It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs and using
to
his
the dogs?
Rendering. Nah, I think he's saying
I always read it as a question.
I think he's saying it firm, but I think he's saying it in the way that the disciples that's what their reaction would be. And so he's saying what they would expect him to say, and then she rebuts, and then he relents. I don't think he didn't know. I guess this is how
I always saw it, and you know, this is, I guess theologically, this is just where I base it from, is like he's fully God and fully man, and he chose to take his God and set it aside. You know what I'm saying? Like he took the attributes of God that he has and set them aside to be man. Like, he still has them, he just has set them aside. Does that sound right? That's generally how I guess I look at it, because like I can't understand, like there's things, for example, if he knew all things, like he comes down and finds the disciples sleeping, you know, when he was up praying, you know, he knew he was going to do that, you know, he knew they were going to do that if he knew that, you know, and so why act surprised?
I think it's for their benefit.
Well, see, that's what I thought, but that would mean that almost everything he did was fully for our benefit to be read later.
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay.
I don't have any reason to not get on board with that. I mean, do you have a problem if that's true?
No, I don't think so.
I think yeah.
I wonder if there might be. I wonder if I'd have to go through and look and see if there's a couple of sticking points where I swerved off thinking that that was the case. I don't remember what it is right now, actually. But
so what about go a step further in that prayer when he says, "If it be your will, take the cup from me, but not my will, but yours be done." If he knows all and knows exactly what's going to happen, why pray that prayer?
Yeah.
I'm asking a question. That's where I've fallen back on. If you are somehow simultaneously a great mystery of the faith, both fully human and fully divine, so capable of being tempted,
right?
You know, capable of understanding what pain is, capable of knowing then fear. You know, you could even know something's going to happen, but still, oh my goodness, you know, I sense where this train's going, and this station is not a place I want to end up. I mean, this is going to hurt. So if it's within your power, take this cup from me. But not my will.
Right.
You and yours be done. I still think you can be both.
Yeah.
You know, you can. You don't have to hold one apart and say, I'm not going to be God.
Yeah, at this point, I was God.
Well, here's the thing. And, like, I mean, I can't fathom that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we could probably talk about it for all day, and I don't know that I'd ever catch the glimpse of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just mysteries of God that I don't understand.
Sure.
At being fully God and fully man at the same time, I don't know if I can grab it.
And I think there's a lot of very smart guys that spend a lot of potentially wasted time arguing that over. I mean,
sure.
I mean, and that's almost blank across the Bible. Like, I mean, there's something to be said for running into some rough stuff and going, I got to figure out what's going on here. You know, doing some study and checking it out. But like, sometimes I go, you know, if that's what God said went down, I love it. Absolutely,
that's what went down.
Put more animals on that boat. I'm sure. I don't care how big it is. That's the thing. People are like, we actually did the dimensions in the boat, and the boat was this big, and there couldn't have been blah blah blah. I'm like, look, if God says those animals are going on a boat, they're going on a boat. If God says stars in the air, there's stars in the air. There's sometimes when I read the whole Bible, sometimes I can come back and say, I've seen enough. You know, if God is who he says he is, I don't know what you're going to say to me that's going to convince me otherwise.
Right. You're getting a stiff argument from a guy that still scratches his butt in front of mixed company, you know? that's the guy that's arguing with you.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing.
Yeah, but I don't think another elephant could have, could have fit. here we go. Three, Jesus, third thing you didn't know. Jesus was
that went down the rabbit hole really fast. Like, we were.
That hit a little close to home, didn't it, Wagner?
I'm glad this camera is only, shoulders up.
From age 12 to 30, Jesus worked in Nazareth as a carpenter. Is not this the carpenter, says the astonished crowds when he begins to preach. The word used for Jesus' profession in the original Greek is tekton. The traditional translation is carpenter, but most contemporary scholars say it's more likely a general craftsman. Some even translate it as day laborer. A tekton would have made doors, tables, lampstands, and plows. But he probably also built stone walls and helped with house construction. It was tough work that meant lugging tools, wood, and stones all over Galilee. Jesus didn't simply stride onto the world stage after having dreamily examined a piece of wood when the mood suited him. For 18 years, he worked, and he worked hard.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Four, Jesus needed me time. Me time. Gospels frequently speak of Jesus' need to withdraw from the crowds and even his disciples. Today, by the Sea of Galilee, where Jesus carried out much of his ministry, you can see how close the towns were and how natural it would have been for the enthusiastic crowds to press in on him, as the Gospels describe. There's even a cave on the shoreline not far from Capernaum, his base of operations, where he may have prayed. It's called the Aramis Cave, from the word for desolate or solitary, from which we got the word hermit. Even though Jesus was the Son of God, he needed time alone in prayer with the Father. That probably would be the only qualm I'd have with that. It's not him time.
Really alone time, so much as connecting with God.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He's not just like, everyone get away from me. I'm going to veg out and be part of my own self.
That's right. Look into my inner self, who's going to tell me the same stupid crap that I screwed up yesterday. It was his idea, you know? I believe you're going to see that number four creep up on xpastors.com as a lot of the issues.
I think you're right about that. And last one, number five, and we touched on this a little bit, Jesus didn't want to die. As he approached his death and prays hard in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus says, remove this cup. It's a blood, I don't know, he quoted as if that's exactly what he said. Hey, remove this cup. It's a blunt prayer addressed to the Father, whom he affectionately calls Abba. He doesn't want to die. Unlike the way some Christians portray Jesus as courting death and even desiring it, like any human being, the idea of death is terrifying. My soul is sorrowful, even unto death, he says. I think he's quoting a psalm there. In other words, I'm so sad that it feels like I'm going to die. But once Jesus realizes that this is somehow the will of the Father, see, I'm having trouble with that. Once Jesus realizes, oh, you know what? It is the will of the Father.
All right. I don't even know how I got here.
Yeah. He ascends to death, even on a cross. It's natural to want to know as much as we can about Jesus, inappropriate semicolon. That's one reason I wrote my new book.
Oh, here we go.
But beware of the more outlandish claims about the Son of God. He fathered children. He was married to Mary Magdalene. He spent time in India and so on. Here's what's interesting about that statement, right? The things I believe are outlandish. Are they not?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't the story of Jesus an outlandish story?
Yes, it is.
So to be like, well, he was married. he spent time in India. He fathered children. Those really aren't outlandish claims, except for the fact that they're pretty normal things that a dude would do compared to, say, a Jesus who did some outlandish things that those things actually don't fit in on. But it's weird to see outlandish attached to he got married, he had kids, and
went
to India.
And then he really fell off the wagon and went to India.
What? Says many of these claims tend to project our own desires on a man who will always remain somewhat elusive. The elusive Jesus. Hard to fully understand and impossible to pin down. He's squirrely.
You know, here's
the... I wonder if Jesus is Scooby-Doo on Facebook. You know, if he fills it out, like, you are Scooby-Doo. You know,
I knew it.
We got back to it.
Okay, here's the deal. I saw one Scooby-Doo episode where Shaggy had a dream that Scooby had turned into a human, and they showed what he would look like as a human, and it was awesome. It was like the fulfillment of every childhood, you know, who grew up in the 80s. I was pretty jazzed about it. And he goes, dude, can I borrow your shades? And that's all he said, and then the dream was over.
Wait, is it like a modern Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. It's a circus. The circus one. What's it called? I don't remember what it's called.
I've actually been relatively impressed with the modern Scooby-Doos. Yes. Like, a lot of times they take the cartoons and they jack with them, right? And they look terrible and the voices aren't right and the music's not the same. The modern Scooby-Doos are actually pretty good.
Yep.
They've done pretty well with them.
Yeah. Folks, it is only on Life from the Path that you can go from the five things you didn't know about Jesus to the modern day Scooby-Doo and how great they look.
Here's the thing. People think Christians are weird, and it's not going to be for this show.
You know what?
We're just regular dudes who love Jesus and Scooby-Doo in descending
That's
order.
Right. I love the Apostle Paul, Cracklin' Oat Bran, and sometimes the old Family Matters reruns. That's what I do with my time.
Did I do that? Anybody?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
Wagner has the
suspenders
in his
closet. So if I delete Facebook,
closet.
I don't get your invites this anymore. That's going to be a bummer.
Yeah, I know where you live, kind of. So, your problem with being a pastor.
You're listening to Life from the Path. I don't know. What was the stuff I said that we were going to talk about? What else did you not know? Oh, let's talk about the ex-pastors, because I thought this was kind of an interesting deal. And then we can get to the stories about how people read the Bible. All right, so xpastors.com. Now, first of all, this is a pretty slick-looking website, and it may not be what you think. I immediately walked into this thinking this was like a haven for people that left the church to like grouse about the church and be upset about how God's people treated them and probably about God, too. That's not that. It's a ministry deal that some guys have put together to kind of help people that have left the ministry and provide support to people that are in it. So I think they're doing a very positive thing. But I was reading this article about why do so many pastors leave the ministry, and I thought some of these facts were interesting. The first one says most pastors are overworked. 90% of pastors report working between 55 to 75 hours per week, and 50% feel unable to meet the demands of the job. Now, it's a very time-intensive lifestyle, but I think the word lifestyle there is important.
Yeah.
Like, what you've agreed to is a way of living. It is not a job. If you clocked in, if you thought you were walking into... a work where like you even tracking hours I think is a foolish thing, like a guy that notices how many hours he's doing. I feel like that's setting the wrong thought about what it is that you're agreeing to as a shepherd of people. Do I think it's true that the pastors spend a lot of time and they're pulled in so many different directions that it causes unhealth in other parts of life? Yes, I think that's very possible.
Sure.
I think it's very possible. But thinking about hours, I think, is actually the wrong attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, do you like you guys are both pastors? Do you find this to be an issue? Do you have to revert back to it and go, hey, you know, I think I put in too much last week. I should tone it down this week.
I've never thought that. But I notice it, but I protect that. Like, there are things that are, to be a good pastor, I have to protect. I have to protect the relationship with my family. Yeah. I have to protect my own sanity. I can't help people if things aren't well with me. I have to protect my health, I have to protect my sleep. Like, you can't help people if you're in a bad way.
Yeah, and I don't feel bad about it. If I do get that 75, 85 hour week, you know, you're just putting in the time. It's really emotionally intensive, or you're really studying, or you're really immersed in whether it be worship or counseling. I don't feel bad the next week if I have 1 4-hour day.
Yeah,
but I don't go, okay, now I'm at 4, then I'll be at 12, then I'll be 18. I just, you know what? I need a little Sabbath.
Yeah.
This afternoon, my load isn't that big. I'm gonna go home and see my kids for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe my wife if I'm lucky.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if things pan out, sure.
If she's lucky, if I'm lucky. You know. But yeah, I think counting hours, you get yourself into a situation where you're trying to assign value to the amount of time you have, and you know what? You decided to give your life to God in a very specific way.
Yeah.
And I think that way is as often as He needs you.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And if you look at some of that, I think, is not having the right expectation of what you're agreeing to. You don't have to be a pastor. You can love Jesus and work at the 7-Eleven. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're agreeing to a certain thing when you're a pastor. If you look look at how God uses people biblically, those guys tend to get through the ringer. Through the ringer. People are always like, I wish someone would, wish God would talk to me the way He talked to, like, the prophets of old, right? Have you seen those guys?
Yeah.
Like, that's terrible. Like, they live a rough life. They're a sign act, right? They're the guys who, like, God not only says, this is what things are going to happen, but He makes you, like, work it out, generally with your body, as to how things are going to go down.
Yeah.
Jeremiah was in a rough way. Elijah, rough way. You know, like, I don't want to be one of those guys. But, like, I don't know how you can, if we walk into it, say, you know, I want to be a pastor, like, either you were deceived or blind when you walked into it if you didn't think that you were going to run into some rough stuff.
Right.
And it's,
absolutely.
And to have 90% of pastors report, 50% feel unable to meet the demands of the job. I think that's reasonable because the demands are so high. But, like, I don't know, your attitude about it has got to be right. Like, just know what you're getting into. Like, don't be deceived about what that is. You're dealing primarily with people, and people are risky, rough business. That's what people are. They bring stuff in.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, always. But like, that's your gig. That's why God has you where He has you. Or He doesn't have you there at all. Go work at the 7-Eleven.
Right.
That's cool.
You worked outside of His blessings, and you decided you were going to be a pastor without Him saying okay, and now you're kind of taking the rough end of the stick.
Yeah. Yeah. It says 70% of pastors feel grossly underpaid. Well, based upon if you're approaching it from the work, that work hour perspective, I think that makes a lot of sense coming from that direction.
Sure.
I think a lot of pastors are underpaid. Honestly, I think a lot of times we expect pastors to work, like by the skin of their teeth. You want to cause a guy problems where he's not able to help you and lead the congregation well. Make that guy worry about money all the time. Now, he shouldn't be swimming in it. Like, I my guess is he's got better stuff to do with his money than swim around in it Scrooge McDuck style, right? But, like, I mean, there's guys earning what, 22 grand a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rich in Ethiopia, but he don't live in Ethiopia. He can live on the street for 22, maybe a little tiny apartment. So, I mean, like, there's a balance there, but there are a lot of, there is a problem with that. There's a problem with it the other way, but I think there is an issue where a lot of pastors are grossly underpaid, and they spend a lot of time struggling with finances. And it's hard for them, frankly, to focus on other things because, like, their kids still have to eat. They still have responsibilities outside of the church. And as a church family, we should be taking care of that. Most pastors feel unprepared. What are your thoughts, Mike?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I don't know how y'all do that job anyway. Yeah, I mean,
it's very high. It says 90% feel they're inadequately trained to cope with the ministry demands, and 90% of pastors said the ministry was completely different than what they thought it would be like before they entered the ministry.
Here's the thing that I like I can throw down on some teaching the Bible. I can't throw down on counseling, talking to people. Here's the deal, because like I've tried this before and it fails. I used to think that talking to people when they're having a rough time kind of been so easy, right? Because I know the answer. The answer is you need to be in a relationship with Jesus, and they're like, well, that sounds lame, and that's not the deal. You don't really understand my problem. And I'm like, I understand it. You need Jesus. God made the world. You know, I'm telling you, it never works that way. And that, like it never works. You know what I'm saying? Like I know it's the right answer, but you know, it doesn't work like I thought it would. I thought, well, you know, Jesus fixed me. Jesus fixed everybody I know. That's the deal. And they're always like, you don't understand my problems. You're not even listening to me. You're just saying the same thing 10 other people said. I don't want to hear it. You know, and so like, I always thought the counseling end was the easiest part and the teaching was where you really had to struggle. And now I've realized, I think it's all flipped around. You know, like the teaching you can throw down. It's just you and God. You, You pray and you read and you say, Lord, tell me what you want me to tell your people. That seems easy because it's just you and God. As soon as people are introduced, that's where it falls off the rails for me. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how you guys do it. And I could see that, like, because you don't know when someone's going to have a crisis. You know, if your Saturday's your sermon writing day and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, so-and-so left his wife and his two kids and they got no money and they're having to go, you know, you're involved, right? You're in. Yeah. You love people. You shepherd. And so, you know, hopefully you keep a sermon in the back burner. Is that how it works? You guys keep one in the safe?
Back pocket.
Just in case.
Have you always been a pastor?
No.
No.
No, and I'm bivocational.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't always a pastor either. And so sometimes when I'll have, you know, pastor friends, quote unquote, hey, I'm getting burned out. Hey, I'm not ready for all these changes. Hey, I'm underprepared. I think that happens in every vocation.
Yeah.
At some point, right? You know, you go to a job site as a construction worker and they say, hey, by the way, we changed the plans today and you got to start this part over. Whoa, I was not prepared for this.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You know, that's going to happen everywhere. It's just how you deal with it. You know? And if you're someone who can deal with change quickly, I think being a pastor, you have to be able to deal with change very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Contextual change, relationship change, you know, person to person, conversational change, that kind of dynamic of balancing.
Yeah.
How do I offer the truth in such a way that you're actually going to listen to it?
Yeah.
Right now and not just kind of turn it
off. Do
you
know how to do that, John?
I'm working on it.
Because I could use some help.
we'll go to commercial. We'll come back and talk about it.
How to talk to people about Jesus with John Wagner.
It's a separate show. It happens right after this.
Let's see. Can we
flip back? I want to flip back to the money one.
Yeah, yeah, hit me.
To the money
He's
one.
Been yeah. thinking about it.
I was over here scratching my face. I rubbed myself raw during that whole time.
Okay.
You know, I think either one of us would be lying if we didn't say that it had never crossed our mind.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want people also to think that, you know, pastors sit back on the back chair, the ones who are good, and they say, I'm not worried about money. It never crossed my mind. I never think, what if I made more? What if I made less money? But I know from a personal perspective, and I think that everyone can relate to this, that when I'm thinking about that, it's usually because of envy or greed.
Yeah.
It isn't because I'm not making ends meet. It's not because I don't think I'm being paid fairly. It's because my eye caught something I don't have.
Oh, yeah.
Or
yeah.
My heart caught something it's not supposed to have a hold of.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's when I have to backtrack. I mean, quick, or else I do. Just like anybody else, I fall in that pattern of, well, how can I make more money then?
Yeah.
Right, you know, I go, when I sell some Advocare. I don't do that, but you know,
yeah, right.
I've got to find some other way. I have to give plasma every other day so I can get whatever it is everyone else has that I want because I see it. It looks good. It looks fun. So
yep.
I think it's the same sin of greed, envy, pride, all that stuff that causes even pastors, you know, deep breath. Whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
To fall into that kind of man. Maybe I don't make enough money.
Yeah. Maybe I could use a little more.
Maybe I could use a little more. Maybe this one's making more than me across town. You know, it's hard.
Isn't that the perspective change though? Is like when that shows up instead of doubling down on no, you know. I really do need this. You're like, whoa, what happened to me here?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's part of it. Keep rolling. I got popes down.
My bad. I pulled you out.
Okay.
My fault.
Let's see. I was the one thing I was going to say is that it was 90% of pastors say they feel unprepared or that the ministry was completely different than what they thought it would be. And so coming from non-church work and then moving into the pastorate, like, I can't imagine having gone another direction. I can't imagine. I've seen some guys come straight out of college and they got a church and like they're the pastor of that church. That would scare the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Just the flying poops would scare out of me to like rock. And your job is to lead a bunch of people. You're young. They're probably twice your age. You have no experience doing that. And I've seen a lot of churches where they've expected the pastor to be like a guy that knows everything about everything. And like, that's not the guy. The poor guy is trying to do a bunch of stuff that he has no idea what to do. And some of that's a bad expectation, but like some of it is that we, I don't know, some of our system is to pass people into a structure where they didn't have time to mature into it before they did it.
Not a lot of mentoring.
That's right.
In the pastor game.
That's right. All.
You don't send young Pastor John off to some hotshot pastor somewhere to teach him. You send him to a little church in the middle of nowhere and say, good luck.
Yeah.
Right.
Good luck with those guys. Yeah. In fact, that's one of the things I was talking with Dan with, and one of the things where I lack a lot of experience is, you know, let's say you get the call and somebody's been in a car accident.
Right.
My instinct is to go, I have no idea what to say to that guy.
Yeah.
Like what, you know, some guy says, Hey, I want to talk to you about baptism. You know, what, how do you start that? Like, I know the conversation to have.
Right.
I don't know how to start it. I'm lame. I'm not a people guy.
I don't think it's so much that you're lame either. Even if you go and watch it, you know, I work at a fairly large church, and so I had the blessing of going with Yeah. Other pastors the first few times, and oh, we're going to go meet with the family. They said someone passed away.
Yeah.
Or we're going to go to the hospital. Someone's in really bad shape. But until you say those words yourself for the first time, you could watch it a million times on YouTube. Yep. You could go sit with somebody. It
YouTube
won't matter.
Watching people give cards.
Google it. Google it. You know, it's probably a tangent off the ex-pastor site. No, but until you do it yourself, there's just nothing quite like having to speak those words on your own. You learn from that.
Yeah.
It's good.
Said many pastors struggle with depression and discouragement. 70% of pastors constantly fight depression, and 50% of pastors feel so discouraged that they would leave the ministry if they could, but have no other way to make a living. 50% of pastors. Okay, this is where I'm going to call the pansy card. Like, you've been called... Ooh. You have been that's called to lead God's people. Like, that's your gig. Not hey, I'm discouraged, I'm going to bail. I'm not saying that people won't discourage you. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Who's the guy that married the prostitute?
Which one?
Who am I thinking of?
Donald Trump.
The prophet. No. The prophet.
Like pop culture?
What we come on. About? Where's Hudson when I need him?
You're talking Old Testament.
Yeah.
He had to marry... Gomer.
Said, yes. Gomer was the prostitute.
And it was... Come on, Wagner.
I can't drop names.
Be just
I
second.
Don't know my mom's name.
Who married Gomer in the Bible? Hold on.
Who remember?
Hosea.
Hosea.
There we go. Okay.
Of course.
Okay. So Hosea was forced to marry Gomer as an example. All right. Now you tell me he didn't feel a little discouraged from time to time.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Put some. God has given you a position of strength to do it.
Let's separate though for a minute too, just in case somebody's listening. Predisposition to depression. You know, chemical issues.
Yeah.
And I am depressed about my job.
Yeah.
You know, because you walk in and you have some predispositions to getting down on yourself, feeling bad about who you are, having self-confidence issues. Well, man, you're going to get beat.
No, you will get beat up. Agreed.
You know, and that's really hard.
But agreed.
Again, it kind of comes back to that first thing you brought up. You kind of knew what you were getting into when you started.
Yeah. Or maybe they didn't. 90% fell unprepared. We're failing these guys.
Yeah.
We're sending them out to the wolves and be like, you're supposed to be the
Well, shepherd. I mean, they got some culpability in there too. Like, we're not, I mean, you know, we're failing them. I mean, I can tell right now that I'm not built for this gig, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm glad y'all do it. I'm not built for that. But, like, if I was going to do it, I certainly wouldn't walk in blind with just me and my talents. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'd have to follow a guy around for a little while. I'm like,
that's a lot of talent you're holding.
I know. I can't even fit through the door.
One hand.
The pastor door is small, and it can't fit my talents. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no job I do with that. I don't just, you know, I start bidding concrete work. I don't know how to do concrete. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I'll figure it out when I get there. That's dumb. Like, that's just foolish to start.
Say, speaking of families, most pastors' families are negatively impacted. 80% believe pastoral ministry has negatively affected their families. 80% of spouses feel the pastor is overworked and feel left out and underappreciated by church members.
I always think that would be the number one issue.
I think it's a very... yes and no.
Because it takes a lot of time, right?
No, it does. It's a yes and no, but, like, I don't know. Don't let the sheep beat you up. I mean, protect your family. Be conscious of that. I think every pastor has a situation where it could put your family at risk. I mean, you got to be firm. You got to protect that stuff, right? And you have to know that. Now, there will be seasons where things kind of come and go, and things are impacted more than others. I've been through some of those, but I mean, you got to be conscious of that. And maybe the thing is which I think we'll get to the next one, it says pastors are lonely. 70% do not have someone they consider a close friend. Like, do you got people in your life that are like, hey, man, I feel like I can tell that you've been working a lot. How's your family? Right. How are you and your family? You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you will get caught up in that. But other people's problems are thick. They'll get thick. And it's easy to get caught up into that stuff. I mean, do you have someone around you that's willing to kind of grab you and say, hey, man, how's your family doing? You got to step away. I know they got there's all this stuff going on, but you're going to have to pull back. Your responsibilities to your family.
Yeah. Well, I guess I feel blessed. I came into the ministry 7 years after working in corporate America. I worked at downtown insurance company. And so when it wasn't like I had made a choice or I felt called by God to be a pastor and then I met my wife.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. You know, I talked about it with her.
Yeah.
Like, is this something that we can do together? Will you support me in this? Will you pray for me? And I'm blessed that she said yes. It's going to be hard, but I will pray with you and we'll do this together and I'll be your partner. So perhaps some of the marital unrest.
Yeah.
If you find someone, you meet someone, oh, you're a pastor. Hey, that's going to be interesting. Well, let's give it a run.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but
here's the situation that I find.
You don't buy a home without talking.
No.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? Like,
right.
This is a life change, you know, a life decision.
like I see that I could see this as being a definite possibility. Is you have serial people like within your people that you're shepherding over that are like they're always in need. Doesn't matter what happens. You know what I'm saying? Like every 2 days it's something outrageous or ridiculous. You know, and like you set that fence up to protect your family, but you always go. You know what I'm saying? You always go. You kind of always go. And like I could see if my wife was doing that all the time, you know, she had some kind of wayward problem, and like look, we know how this is going to end. Can you just not go this time? You know what I'm saying? And like, but you still go. And I could, that's where I could see it. You know, breeding some issue. And like, yeah. Once again, I ain't geared up for this job, so I can be honest, and I just feel that way. You know what I'm saying? Y'all got to straighten that out of your place, but I don't have to worry about it because people don't call me. but that's where I could see it causing problems. You know what I'm saying? Like, because your wife is no fool. She sees the writing on the wall. She knows what the deal is. But like, you know, you leave the one for the 99, the sheep or the sheep. And so you go.
Yeah.
And so that's where I could see the issue.
Yeah. Being. And I suppose like there's, I want to be very harsh and then very loving here. It's like I've not seen everything. There's guys that have been doing pastor work for significantly longer than I have, and maybe even shorter, that have seen things that I couldn't even imagine dealing with.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
Yep.
Even so, I feel like the basics are the basics here. I mean, like if God has called you to that, He's also called you to do it well. And sometimes doing it well is you don't sacrifice yourself on the altar of the church. You serve God. And sometimes what is serving those people is to take care of yourself better. Is to make sure you're taking care of your family. You can't be a good example doing the wrong things for the right reasons. It just doesn't work that way. And you know what? 20 years from now, maybe I'll speak differently. Maybe I'll be jaded and I'll change it. But like I feel like the simple answers, simple answers, and the surprise worries me to a certain extent that we have so many guys that are entering the pastorate that like are so surprised at what that is, and I don't know how that changes, I struggle for these guys who have entered and had this ideal of what it was going to be like, and then what it says 50% of the ministers starting out will not last 5 years. 5 years and they're gone. One out of every 10 will actually retire as a minister in some form. One out of 10 will start and then retire as a minister.
That's pretty low.
And 4,000 new churches begin each year, good while 7,000 close. That's rough. That's rough.
That's right. It's Ben and Wagner in the room. One of us is going down.
One of us ain't making it.
Oh, crap. Either that or we need to find 18 other guys who don't like it. All right. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I thought it's an interesting perspective, especially if you're coming from like you're not a pastor, and seeing kind of the things that some of these guys are struggling with.
And something else we don't talk about, I think, enough as pastors is, do you have a season? You know, has God called you to be a pastor for the rest of your life? Or has God called you to be a pastor for a time and then calls you to something else? There was a comment, you read something about how they felt like they couldn't leave because they couldn't get another job.
Yeah.
You know, but so if you're in that spot where you're like, boy, I'm just bad at my job. I'm not a good pastor. I'm not helping people. I'm not preaching effectively. But I'm going to stay because I need a job. I think you work with your church, you work with your friends, you find some connections, you get a hold of whatever kind of denomination you're involved in.
Yeah.
You get some help and say, is there anything else I can be doing?
Yeah, can I do something else? Yeah, definitely.
I work in the administration?
I feel like the Lord will almost just bless you stopping leading his people correctly.
Right.
You know, like even if you made the mistake, I mean, he's still got a heart for you. He still loves you, you know, and so like you making the solid decision, be like, I'm not being helpful to your kingdom in this area. Put me where I belong, even if it's in the janitorial staff. That's where I want to be. Yeah. I want to glorify you, and right now I'm having a hard time doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. By the way, Life from the Path is brought to you by the Eisenlauer Team. Go to eisenlauerteam.com. Hey, spring is a-coming. It should already be here, and you can make spring come faster if you buy a house from Bob Eisenlauer.
That's right. Someone will already have cleaned up the dog poo, and it'll look shiny.
That is a 0% guarantee that Bob Eisenlauer will bring spring on by you buying a house from him. If you go to eisenlauerteam.com, here's the deal. I love Bob. Bob will tell you better than I will. He knows whether to buy a house or not. He knows what to sell your house for. I like dealing with Bob because he's pretty straight with you. Like, if your house is worth 120, he's not going to be like, oh, yeah, we can put it up for 150.
Yeah, I tried that with him, actually. I said, Bob, I want to sell for 175. He goes, this house is worth 130, Mike. And you're looking at 6 months at that price. I'm like, all right, that's fair. 125.
Yeah. Bob's a great guy to deal with. He's been on the show a few times, and he's a good friend. And he knows what he's doing. And so if you need to buy and sell in a home, Bob Eisenlauer is the guy to go to. Go to eisenlauerteam.com. You can learn about him. His phone numbers are posted to the website. And if nothing else, give him a call, send him a text, send him an email, go to his house late at night.
He's always
so that,
up.
So that he will remember that you said, I heard about you on Life in the Path.
Absolutely.
Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital here in Johnston. So here's the deal. My dog has, I can't do with this thing anymore. The dog, you know when dogs get older, they start to get like little growths on them. Some dogs do. They get
little.
We just got a dog, so don't talk about
okay.
this.
Okay. Yeah. It's
still getting, little.
It's a growth happening.
A bulbous
boy.
But the brown dog I got, it's got, a giant something.
It's the size of a golf ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. And we'd kind of taken him in before, and they were pretty cool about it. They kind of looked at it and said, well, you know, you could take it off if you wanted to. But if she's not bothering her or whatever, not a big deal. Problem is, it's kind of it's by her hind,
ooh,
and she keeps leaving remnants on it.
Oh no!
And I'm thought I can't do we can't do this anymore. We can't do this stuff anymore. So I think we're gonna have to take him in and we're going to Westfield. We're going
to Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Yeah.
That's the deal.
That's how we get back.
That's the deal. It's because like they know our dogs.
They don't like remnants.
They've given us they've taken great care of us in the past. And as the situation changes, like that's just where we're going to go. So go to Westfield Veterinary Hospital, westfieldvethospital.com, and you can set up an appointment online. And if you didn't, so we're past dental month. February was dental month, and I feel like you didn't go.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm certain you didn't go, you lazy, lazy man.
That's right. Them Doritos ain't cleaning the dog's teeth. You know better than that.
Yeah, yeah. They don't lick themselves clean. You know, yeah. you brush twice a day and floss. You left the dog on his own.
Yeah, green plastic toothbrush that came in a dog bag. Seriously, you know that ain't cleaning nothing.
So
that's ridiculous.
You know, get on the train, get them their shots, and help get them up to date on their dental stuff. You've had a toothache, right? Like your dog can't whine about
that
stuff.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, so the dog got a toothache. He can't do anything about it. He's sitting in pain.
You know what your fix is when your dog has a toothache? Let him outside.
Yeah.
You think everything gets fixed outside like it's some kind of magic fairyland out there. As soon as the dog shows up, meow, meow, he must want to go out.
Yeah.
Oh, that didn't fix it. You want something to eat? You know what I'm saying? Two things that don't help a dog with a toothache, food and cold.
Yeah.
Like, and these were your plans. Take the dog into the vet.
Go to westfieldvethospital.com and they can help you out with
that. Be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mike, you got some Pope style?
I do.
Okay, we can't believe we couldn't identify Jose and Gomer.
So the premise of the Pope style advice is, let's say for some oddball reason, people mistook my house for a location of where the Pope is. They got somebody put a bug in their ear, gossip happened, way off track. They're like, the Pope's in there. And now there's 10,000 people gathered on my front lawn, and regardless of whether I'm the actual Pope or not, they're not leaving. They want to hear some words of wisdom, some things to live by, and some things to how they're going to go today and change the way that they're living. And so that's the premise of the Pope style advice. And actually, here's mine for the week. Sometimes I find it very easy to lull in the middle with my relationship with God. And what I mean by that is like, and you'll see this a lot with kids that grew up in the church. And is what you'll see is you'll have all the baseline knowledge, and you'll have heard ways of which people have allowed Christ to change their life. But it's got no shine on it for you right now. You know what I'm saying? You've lost your awe of God. Like the fact that Jesus died for you is, you can accept that, but you're not awed by it anymore. You're not blown away by it. You don't see it as for what it was. And actually, I found myself in this position. I'll be honest, for the last couple of weeks, that's kind of where I've been. My Bible wasn't popping out at me. My prayer life is sour. It just is. Like, I want nothing more than to connect with God, but I don't have time, I think. You know, and I'll give it a shot, and I won't feel that shine and that awe, and I'll be like, you know, it's ain't working. And here's my Pope style advice, and I'm struggling to take it myself, so, you know, don't take this too far to heart. But my Pope style advice is that when that happens, because I think it happens to everybody, hopefully it's not just me, I think it happens to everybody. But if you can take a step back and take a look back at that time when you first heard the gospel of Jesus Christ and try to lose everything you've learned since then, right? Like, I know a lot about the Apostle Paul. I know a lot about what happened in between the Old and the New Testament. You know what I'm saying? I have a lot of knowledge, because it was important to me. I know a lot about the book of Luke because I studied it chapter by chapter, right? Knowledge I have, heart I'm losing. And it's because I changed my perspective of who Jesus was to me. I changed him from being the ruler of a kingdom that I wanted to be in, and you know, the person that invited me to come in the first place, to just a guy that exists in my neighborhood. And I know that kind of sounds weird, and I don't know if that's making a whole lot of sense to you, but there comes a time that he starts to be part of your life and not ruler of your life, not king of your life, and just kind of there. And like I said, I'm kind of going through that right now, and I found that it's turning around for me because I changed my perspective on how I saw him. I realized that I want nothing more than to be in his kingdom. And I want nothing more than to have him as my ruler. I took him down, and I put him down with me like we were just buds and we were just hanging out. And if I didn't talk to him that day, it wasn't that big of a deal. And I really didn't need direction from him. I got it for today. I got today. I just won't sin. You know. And then what happens is you start to measure how close you are to Jesus based on how often or how badly you sin. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then your whole relationship is predicated on something that you will inevitably do. You will inevitably separate yourself from God by sinning. It's going to happen. Now, as you progress your relationship with Jesus Christ, it hopefully will become less. And you will become more like him, and he will help shed the ways that you used to call your own, and they will make him his. But when you start judging where your position is with Christ based on that, then you are always going to be disappointed, and you're always going to feel far from him. And that's not the deal. Like, he doesn't look at your relationship that way. And so I guess my Pope style advice for this week is that if you're struggling in the same way that I am currently, you were struggling that way, do yourself a favor and try to forget everything that you've gained throughout your relationship with Christ, and go right back to the beginning when it had a lot of that grace that he was offering. And that opportunity that he was offering you had a lot of shine on it. Remember what it looked like when you got it, and not what it's become or that hasn't really lost its luster. It's the exact same gift that it's always been. You're looking at it differently. And so I don't know if that'll quite hit as hard on everybody as it did me. But like that's what's kind of shaken me up kind of in the last week, because it's like I said, it's happened to me. I mean, let's be honest. I spend a lot of time around people that love Jesus, and after a while, it gets to become mundane. You know what I'm saying? Someone shows up and said, I prayed and God healed my son. He was going to die. He had cancer. He's 6 months old. And then 2 months later, we're cancer free. We got nothing. And I go, yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah.
You know, he's in the business of that, you know? And like, that's true. And like for my justification, I'm like, I would expect nothing less from God because he's just awesome. Right. But like, do I feel that shine of what he really did, what he really did there, and the effects of what he did as it spread out for his glory and the joy of his people? Like, that's the shine that starts to lose. And it's not because it's not there. It's just because I'm not looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my Pope style advice.
John, you ever felt that in your life? Like, you go through seasons of that?
Absolutely. Holy cow. Like, you were just preaching at me, by the way, the last two times I've been here. You've done that to me, and I walk away feeling like either really good or really small.
Right.
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
Probably. I do that to myself too.
Don't worry about it. That whole "you can't be a pastor" thing, that's a bunch of malarkey. No, absolutely. And you know what? For me, we're going to go full circle. That whole fully human, fully divine thing.
Yeah.
I think we spend time not only preaching it, but trying to encourage people that, you know, God wants to walk with you. That Jesus came to this earth to be a man so he would know what your life might be like, so he can relate to you, and he wants to be your friend, you know, and so you kind of build that relationship with God that's on your own level.
Yeah.
Like, there's Jesus walking next to me every day. Oh, Jesus came with me. Holy Spirit's with me. And we forget to kind of think, just time out for a minute. Like, this is the same God who created everything.
Yeah.
Whether he snapped his fingers, whether it was 7 days, 7 billion years, it doesn't matter.
Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is the God who created everything and then sent his son. Not just to be like you, but to be your king, you know, to be your Lord. And definitely, you know, you work in the church, so all you hear about every day, and it's a great thing. What an awesome blessing it is to have almost all my time every day be hearing about what's happening in the church, who loves Jesus, who's coming to know Jesus, who's fallen away, we should go talk to this person.
Yeah.
How should I be studying Jesus every single day? But, you know, when you watch the same movie over and over, your favorite movie, you put it back in, you're like, oh, man.
I can't believe I watched this like 15
times.
Yeah,
I know this scene. There's nothing in that for me right now. You almost do have to kind of take a step back. And I love the way you said that. Go back to when you first heard the good news, when you first got that glimpse of, you mean Jesus did that for me?
Yeah.
And recapture that just for a second and see what that does to the knowledge that you've gained.
Yeah.
I've been there too many times. Where it feels like my prayers are just kind of one-way prayers, and I'll stop. Like, well,
I'm not getting anything out of this right now.
Right. I feel like we'll do this later, I guess.
Yep. Hopefully by Sunday you'll come talk to me and we'll have something profound to say.
Yeah.
And
you know what? Sometimes we almost predicate, we cause our own trouble within the way that we organize our church, but like communion's the big deal, you know what I'm saying? And so like I figure, well, we'll straighten this out in the 30 seconds prior to communion. Before Pastor Man interrupts my prayer for his own prayer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they want to take my juice right now. I want to keep it. You know, let me keep it for
a
minute.
Give me a second to think about
this. And by
the
time I get my, you know, look, I've not been anywhere close to you. Okay, let's all pray together. Lord, thank you for our gathering. I'm like, I wasn't done. You know, I just want a cracker and juice myself, you know. But like, sometimes we make it, and I'm not passionate on communion. Like, I'm good with it. I'm just saying that, like, sometimes we take that event and make it bigger than it is. Like, it's a celebration of us being in the kingdom and how the kingdom was established and remembering how that went down. But like, if you're doing all your if you're doing all your entire relationship with God in 45 seconds before the juice goes down, you don't know, I'd skip it. I'll be honest with you, I would skip communion if that's your deal.
The other thing I liked, I'm not going to skip off communion, but the other thing I like, what you said, I'm a
John's against it.
I love communion. It's short. It's fine. Whatever. I love what you said about if you make your whole life about not sinning, you're always going to set yourself up to be disappointed.
Yeah.
You know, you come back to when Jesus is talking, he says, I'm going to sum up all the law with this, you know, love God, love your neighbor, you know, with everything you got.
Yeah.
You could have said, don't sin.
Right. Do the right thing
all
the time.
Don't make mistakes.
Yeah.
And this is going to work out great, you know, but adore me, like, first. And then treat other people right, you know, and I fall into that same trap too. Like, I start to measure, what's my progress in my faith life this week? Have I prayed more like I said I would?
Yeah.
I read my Bible 7 more times like I said I would. Have I spent the extra 15 minutes in prayer? Crap, I fell short. And here's another place I fell short. Oops, and it looks like I had to talk to this person like I shouldn't have. And boom, 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 boom. And all of a sudden my life has become, have I lived up to this expectation I think God has for me?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, can I cross this off? And you got to get away from that. Worship God. Who is he? Your Savior. Give your life to him. Get back to that spot and let the rest of it kind of fall back into place.
You're listening to Life from the Path. Hey, if you're on 99.3, we got to let you go. We got more show to come here on the podcast. And thank you for listening to Life from the Path.
I know that he suffered, despite the joy set before him. He endured the cross for us.
Huh? Oh, yeah, we still talking.
Me, Wagner, need to talk later.
I just hit him. He didn't like that.
Oh, yeah. Dan tried to hit me once. Then I sent him to Texas.
Once.
I think there's a lot to that Pope style, Mike. I think John nailed it. I think everybody goes through that type of thing. Yeah. And like what's the a lot of times we look at what the book of James and we're talking about persecution and stuff. But I don't think that's just persecution from like guys that were bold in the faith, you know, like this is talking about, you know, Paul's talking, stay the course, not James, but Paul's talking, you know, stay the course. You're going to hear people saying other things. You're going to get distracted. Life is going to happen around you and it's going to pull your eyes off the thing that you heard. It's weird that you're saying that. Cause like I've felt almost that exact same thing these last 2 weeks, maybe last 3 weeks.
Dang.
John Wagner too.
Hand up.
We've been struggling.
Rough times in the room tonight.
And here's the deal. It's not that I don't believe that God is who he says he is. I totally do. I believe everything that Jesus died on the cross. I'm in. I'm the textbook box checker. I win. But like, I've been struggling this week where like I would catch myself praying and I'm like, I'm sorry, God. I'm kind of talking at you. I'm just like,
right,
you know, and I meant everything I said. But like I'm just, and I'm not looking for some otherworldly experience. I'm not looking for a belly tickle. But like I felt that I was trying hard, but still that I was kind of mailing it in, and I've been fighting that over the last few weeks. And when you were talking about measuring the healthy relationship by how much you sin or not, I was trying to think is like how do you reorient that right by loving God and loving your neighbor, and then like how passionately, in the light of that, then how passionately are you seeking restoration with both, right? As opposed to, hey man, crap, I screwed this up again. Crap, I was like this way to this person, or I failed God in this way. You know, do I look at it as how much I stink, or do I look at it and say, you know what? How boldly can I pursue restoration? Hey, I screwed up. Where's the guy that I offended?
You know what?
Yeah.
That ain't no doubt. Because here's the deal. Like, that's what reinvigorates your relationship with God. That's what reinvigorates your life, is when you're willing to say, here's the deal. Most people love you as long as you agree with them. As soon as you don't agree with them, their love fades a little bit. Like, they can't accept love like that, that disagrees with them. They'll love you as long as you're on board with what they're doing. As soon as you tell them something different, they decide to buck up and leave.
Yeah.
Or say, we're done, I'm going to ignore you for a while, right?
You don't love me.
Right. You want to see some change in your life. You let the Holy Spirit convict you, and you go, you know what? Dang, that is totally me. I'm going to fix it right now.
Yeah.
I don't care how embarrassing it is or who I have to tell or what I look like. Because if the Holy Spirit didn't think it was important, he wouldn't have put it on my heart. You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't have said, this is what's separating you from me. This is what's separating you from being where you need to be. I'm not kicking you out of the kingdom.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you're scrubbing the toilets until you can fix this and get where I can really use you, because I built you for a reason, and it wasn't for what you're doing.
That's right. I've never felt stronger as a parent than when I was apologizing to my kids. No, I've never. Like, I felt just like, hey, I screwed up. I didn't handle this the way I should have. I didn't lead you well. I haven't been focusing my attention. I was looking at the Facebook when I should have been talking to you, and I failed you, and I'm sorry, and I will do better. I mean, like, and I walk away from that thinking, that was that easy. It was that easy to be like, and my kids probably didn't even notice, right? But, like, it's relieving to see where God has called you to say, hey, man, these things, there's restoration here. These things are keeping you from the full measure that I've called you to. And you've settled for less, and I don't want you to settle for less. I want you to settle for the peace. I want you to settle for the joy. I want you to settle for the moving of my kingdom. And you settled for less, and that's not, I don't want you to live that way. It's not, he's not got the whip out saying, live better, live better.
That's right.
He's saying, I created something that is so much more than what you've accepted, and I want to call you to something bigger and be a part of what I'm doing and restore that thing. And like, that's a bold way of living. It's a bold way of living as opposed to hiding away from that stuff or calling it not what it is and saying, oh, no, I'm not screwing up or I'm not doing those things wrong, right? Like, living boldly is to say, I am, and I'm looking forward to it being different.
That's right. You know what? And like, I most of the kickback I get, this goes back to me not being able to talk to people effectively about Jesus, right? But like, most of the kickback I get is like, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're talking about kingdom credits to me. I don't see how that affects the way, like my life. Like, great, God loves me. I'm going to have all kinds of trouble. Here's what I can promise you. Like, I have done some terrible things to my employer. I have wasted their money. I have not done a good job when a good job was available. You know what I'm saying? I've done something that I shouldn't have done. I've made mistakes that cost them a lot of money. And every time, I always face that seesaw. Well, I can hide this and they'll never know. Or I could tell them the truth. I promise you, truth always wins. Like, I promise you it always wins, because I it's never in question whether I'm lying to them. Like, it's just like, for example, let's say there's 50 grand missing. And when I accidentally broke something for that, that's going to cost the company 5 grand, I walked right in and I say, I made a mistake. I wasn't paying attention. It's going to cost you 5 grand. It's on me. I did that, right? When the next big mistake shows up and they say, Mike, did you do that? I said, no. And they go, okay. You know what I'm saying? I'm not on the horn for the 50 grand because I told the truth at the 5. Right, it's almost the exact opposite of those can be trusted with little, can be trusted with more. Right, like if I'm willing to be honest in the little things, the big things don't come to my doorstep. They don't accuse me of anything. And like, this is true with your relationships, with your kids, and with your wife, and with people, and with your job. It flows over to everything, and it's so simple as just being honest. When it says love God with all your heart, all your mind, and all your strength, that's an honest love. When it says love people, here's the deal. There's some people I can't provide that love to, and I'm not so foolish to think that I can, right? I go after the people that God has assigned me to, or God has said, I need you to go talk to those people. But like, it's a lie for me to go outside of what God has created me to do. And like, he gives me good categorization. He gives me good boundaries. Like, for example, when I said I'm not built to be a pastor, there's things I'm not able to do. I love to talk about the Bible. I love to teach people about Jesus, right? I am terrible when it comes to counseling. I just am. I have my moments. Most of the time, I'm just not good at it, right? And I'm totally okay with that. He puts certain people in my path if they need to be yelled at or shamed in some way, yeah. And that would be for God's glory and their joy, he'll send me, right? If they need a shoulder to cry on, I will slowly back out of the room and call someone else. Until they get here, I'll wait, but I'm not sticking around.
That's where those guys are coming
from. That's right. If the silence gets more than 30 seconds, I'll crack a joke. Not the right time, right? But that's what I'm built for. And I'm not saying that's a good excuse to be a dullard, but I'm just saying that's just what God has built me to be, and I know that about me, right? And so I like I said, I get a lot of kickback when I talk about the kingdom. They're like, they don't see the kingdom for what it is, which is right here, right now, in the world, not of the world. Like when I say that, like when you're living in the kingdom, everything changes. It honestly does. Like that small piddly business that buried you, it just doesn't matter. It's seriously small piddly business. When you're working for the king and when you're living in the kingdom, the stuff that surrounds is just so small. It's just so small. He's huge when it comes to that stuff. Dang, I'm getting fired back up right now. We just need to talk about Jesus more often, and I get out of my slump. We'll just call together a meeting of the minds or something. Dang. All right. I got some people to apologize to tomorrow. Bummer. You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Repent of your ways.
Do repent of your ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's the deal. I just talked about this last week with some people in our youth group. Like you know, they hear the word repent, and they're like, feel guilty, feel bad. I'm like, don't you fall down there, because that's right where the devil wants you, because you won't do nothing, right? You're like, I'm terrible. I do bad things. God's mad at me. Well, here's the deal. God wanted something better for you. That's what he wanted. They're like, does that mean God's disappointed in me? And I said, no, he's disappointed that you don't have better right now. That's it.
It's like
he still loves you.
Here's the deal. It's like, okay, this is a rough comparison, but this is what popped into my head, all right? It's like God's running a roller coaster. There's lots of cool stuff going down in the roller coaster, and you're standing outside the gate, and he says, okay, everybody come in for the roller coaster, and you don't move. And then 5 minutes later, he comes out and he says, hey man, no, seriously, go ahead, come on into the roller coaster. And you're like, oh, but now you're upset with me because I didn't go on the roller coaster 5 minutes ago, and I'm not sure I should go now, and like, I really screwed that. Ah, crap.
Yeah.
Like, it's that. Just get on to the roller coaster. Just go.
Yeah.
Like, the point was getting you in there, not making you feel bad because the journey didn't start how it was supposed to. Like, the whole the repentance is a turning. It's a turning around. It's fighting for the other team. It's doing, it's moving the other direction. Once you're moving the other direction, it was irrelevant where you were going before. The whole point was to get you moving the other direction. I don't think God's caught up in the process. Just do that. Just do that, and things go away, and you don't have to sweat that process anymore.
No, I agree. Yeah, I agree. In fact, one of the things that I was talking to my wife about this week last week on the show, we talked about the prodigal son, you know, and like it came up again for me this week. Like, I want to be the unsung brother, you know. Of course, I mean, he kind of flakes at the end where he starts complaining, but like,
yeah, he does.
Like, but we talked about a little bit last week, like, you know, he's got 25 years in, 20 years in of being the obedient, second, quiet son who just did what he was asked and was faithful. And then he flaked. But, like, I'll flake after one day of obedience. I'm like, well, this isn't working out. You know, that guy's got more than me. Or why are we doing this? That guy's getting blessings. I'm getting screwed. I can see the whole thing. Right? And, like, I just that's what I've been praying for is, like, I just want to be the obedient guy. I want me to decrease and God to increase. And I just want to shut up and do what I'm told because I know there's love there. And I know there's inherent joy there for me. And, like, if I would stop standing in God's way of helping me, like, I could just be the quiet, happy, obedient second son with plenty of joy, right? Without the big stories or maybe the little stories. I don't care whatever God wants to do with me. That's what I want to do. But, like, I just want to be joyful and obedient because I feel like that's what God has set out and that's what he has planned for me. And, like, he has more joy in mind than I have capable of thinking, no matter what wild, crazy scheme I come up with. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I don't know. That's been my big push lately is to be, without the ending, the prodigal son's brother. You know what I'm saying? Just the quiet B character, nobody.
And I think I think the perspective, the right way to think about it is obedience opens God's doors. Your own perseverance opens your doors. And the question is, if I had the choice between going into God's doors or going into my doors, which one would I pick? I would much rather go into the doors that God opened because God opens, first of all, he opens doors that he wants me to go through. And that's awesome. Also, he's got keys to much bigger doors.
That's right.
And bigger and may not be flashier, may not be more, I don't know, impact more people, but it's God's door and that's the point. And my door's not that impressive. I can't even think of a cool door. I'm trying to think of one at the moment. And I keep coming with that game show where they choose the doors. That's what's in my mind.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Let's Make a Deal. You think that's what God has, let's make a deal door? That's what I'm thinking of.
A $30,000 boat. And that's uptown for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A boat.
Like, God chooses the door. He chooses the path. He chooses the time. That seems way easier than, like, picking my own door, doing my own thing. Like, being obedient to that and letting God drag me around, I can dig on that.
Okay, you want a couple of hits of advice here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Dear, whoa, Well, that one seems kind of rough. Dear Life from the Path, I've been widowed for 5 years. I have a close friend, Louise, who was also close to my late husband. She promised him on his deathbed she would take care of me when he was gone. Well, she has taken it to the extreme. She became very controlling and didn't want me to do anything without her. I went along with it to keep the peace until about a year ago when I met a wonderful man I'll call Bill. Bill recently moved into my home. Louise says he has no right to live there with me because my late husband had to have it built and I have no right to let anyone else stay here. Now she refuses to visit. People have repeated to me some of the awful things she has called Bill. We have had many arguments over the hurtful things she has said in my presence. Bill feels bad about this. He hasn't said or done anything to deserve the treatment Louise is dishing out and has encouraged me to try and work it out. Any advice on how to handle this very stressful situation?
There's a lot of layers to that onion right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. A lot of layers.
Here's the deal. I sounded like the Lord gifted you halfway through the story when you said she doesn't visit anymore. I thought that sounded pretty solid, right? She's causing a bunch of trouble. As long as you and Bill are on the up and up, you know, she went away. That's a win-win. Nobody? I can counsel.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like she's made attempts to reconcile, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I feel like she's made attempts to reconcile, and like, if she's out and Bill's good, and well, I mean, wait, did she marry Bill, or did he just move into her place?
It didn't say the word.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be against Bill moving in without the bonds of matrimony. In fact, that's kind of loose. The guy, yeah, you need to get married.
He's like 70, maybe.
He doesn't
even understand what you're saying anymore.
Wow. So roll back a second, though. What we said before that was, if you tried to make amends, if you brought it up, if you said, you know, hey, why is this bothering you? Or, hey, can we talk about this? And she just isn't responding back. You've done everything you can do, and now she's gone.
Right. Win-win.
1-2.
I feel like you guys got to the same conclusion I did. All right. Secular says.
Wait a minute. The chat says older people need hobbies so they don't gossip about each other. Distract the oldie people.
Hey, look, I found Canasta at the Goodwill.
Canasta. Yeah, I think everything worked out.
No one listens to the show, Wainer. Don't worry about it. There we go. Secular says, yeah, stop trying to appease Louise. She has gone beyond taking care of you and is trying to dictate the way you live your life. Bill means well, but you have already tried to get Louise to accept the situation. Because she refuses, perhaps it's time to move on.
Mm. Mm. Yes, they need married. Yes.
Okay, here we go.
It's not a roommate. No. Jack is a more than a friend. They need to get married.
His name is Bill. Respect him.
Ah, crap.
He's like 70.
I was looking at the chat.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I'm a single mom supporting 4 children with no help from my ex-husband. Ooh, I don't like him already. I am fortunate to have a good job that I like. I referred a friend to the company who has since become a regular employee, and he seems to be happy here. I was recently told that I'll be receiving a referral bonus, which was a pleasant surprise. My friend approached me and asked me point blank to split the money with him. I was taken aback. He knows my situation. He has a wife who also works full time and 2 kids. I think he has a lot of gall to put me in a spot like this. The bonus money will be a huge help to me, and I don't think it's right that he expects me to give half of it to him. Well, how do I handle this while keeping our work relationship intact?
What?
So she got a dude a job, referred him.
I get that, but it's not policy for them to split it, right?
Don't sound like it.
It just seems like a weird thing to be bold enough to go say. Hey, thanks for getting me this job, and by the way, since you got me this job, will you split the money that you get for getting me this job?
Right, because you wouldn't get it without me, right?
I was kind of thinking it was the other way around, but it's not. He's the guy that got hired is asking the guy that got him the job?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not cool at all.
No.
You know what helps?
Even if the person who's writing says, I'm a billionaire. I have more money than I'll ever need. I got this person a job. Now they want the bonus I get for getting them a job. Seems weird to me in the first place.
The answer is no. Yeah. You know what helps these situations? If you can clear all emotion out of it. They say, hey, I feel like you should split that with me. No. And then just kind of let it hang.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, really? Because, I mean, you wouldn't get that bonus without me. That's true. You also wouldn't have a job if I didn't refer it to you. The answer is no. You want to go to lunch or something? You can buy.
Yeah.
I'd deflect and say no in a very frank and unemotional manner and make them feel silly for even asking.
Yeah.
I call them a clown.
Obviously, this is all predicated on them not making an agreement prior to, like, hey, there's a referral bonus coming. Hey, why don't I try to get you hired here and then we can split it?
Yeah, right. I mean, that does happen. Yeah, that's legit.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've done that before.
And I get it going the other way. Like, if you were the guy that referred him and say, I get this bonus, so you split it with me.
Because I started here, yeah.
Yeah, that makes
a
lot of sense.
I referred you, split it, yeah.
Okay, here's what Secular says. Ignore your coworker's question. the subject is raised again, laugh and tell him you thought he...
I'm sorry, what? Ignore the question?
Yeah.
How do you propose that go on?
Can I have half of this? Man, that sub looks delicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sub. Are you doing something different with your sideburns? Because I love them.
Those are too long for normal sideburns.
My hand could get lost in there. Do you mind?
She says, ignore it. If he says he wasn't joking, remind him how hard jobs are to find and tell him he's lucky you didn't ask him for a referral fee. You don't owe him anything. He owes you his gratitude.
Well, I don't know. That sounds kind of lame.
Yeah, I don't know.
I need a dissertation on like how hard it is to find work.
Maybe you should give me money.
Yeah. Did you think about that?
Yeah, forget that noise.
Okay, one more. 11-year-old daughter. Here we go. My 11-year-old daughter, Gwen, just started middle school. She makes good grades, but she's strong-willed. Do kids grow up instantly when they start middle school? Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, that's known. Yep. That's a known fact. She wants to know if she can have a boyfriend. I told her not until she's 15.
You said 11?
Yeah, she's 11.
Okay, sorry.
Now she's flirting with girls who ask her out. I told her to stay away from them, not because they are lesbians, but because they are not good girls. They're always in trouble. Gwen says I'm too strict, and if I don't stop, she will run away. I adopted her at birth. It was an open adoption. And she recently asked me if I'm going to place her for adoption. She was worried that I would. I'm very concerned that she's hanging out with the wrong crowd. Any advice?
I'm sorry, she's being courted by wild 11-year-old lesbians?
That's what it sounds like.
I feel like that's a rough spot. That is a rough spot.
Okay, here's the deal. There's a jungle of weirdness going on with this situation.
Yeah.
You got to roll this whole thing back and figure out what happened. Like, there was a tiny dust bowl that happened somewhere, and then somebody just started rolling it, and it just started catching a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Are you going to replace me up for adoption? Why can't I hang out with 15-year-old lesbians? You know what I'm saying? I want to go out. I want to do what I want. Here's the deal. I have two girls. They're 3 and 6. They already know they can't date until they're 17. We already talked about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just kind of reaffirm it. They also think that I'm picking their husbands out.
Yeah.
When I traded, so they wanted to play the Kindle, and they said, left it in the car. I said, I tell you what, I'll go get it, but you got to let me pick your husband. They said, deal. That's binding. So the 3-year-old, she's in trouble. in either case, something has really happened. There's way too much going on here, and it's way out of left field. These aren't normal conversations.
But the first question, is it normal for a middle school kid to all of a sudden have an attitude? Absolutely.
Yeah.
There you go.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that, it gets really
tough. I feel like
really
I'm going to have to say no to the dating.
Sure.
Whatever threats may come.
Yeah. I don't know. That's hard. What if like, I'm going to run away? Go ahead.
Oh.
How do you do that?
Happened to me once.
I
was a little younger, but I said, you know, my parents gave me a piece of discipline I didn't like. I said, well, I'm going to run away then. Okay.
Did you run?
No.
Huh. No. Were they straightforward, not crazy with it? Just like, if that's what you want to do, we'll probably still be here.
Yeah.
You know?
This will be my house.
I feel like we're not going anywhere, so, yeah.
You will not be welcome back.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I sounds kind of empty threat on the backside, but.
I know. Yeah. That's the thing. My whole thing is honesty, right? And, like, I don't like to make threats like that, but, like, really, if you say you're going to leave, we want to chain you to something.
But the real fear on the adoption end, I think, is something not to overlook. Like, if that's a legitimate, if I do something wrong, are you going to put me up for adoption again?
This kid sounds, that's the thing.
That's tough.
You really have to, you have to know the kid, right? Because it's either an honest fear, like, that you really need to nurture, or the kid's emotionally manipulative.
Yeah, it's a manipulation.
Like, she knows that's a sore button with you, and, like, you have always feared it, and now they're just using it. And you know what? There's going to be a time when they hit, or especially early teens, they're going to say something like that. They're just going to do it to press your buttons, see where you're at, and they're going to regret it, but they're not going to tell you they regret it. You know, all kids go
until they're 40.
That's right. And they're like, I shouldn't have said that. And you know what? They'll carry it around for them for a while. I think everybody does that. Every teenager, you know, as we all like to stereotype them as being crazy and mouthy, and they don't care. They do care. Sometimes their emotion gets run away from them, and they say stuff they don't mean, and they're a bit prideful to take it back. You know what I'm saying? And, like, it could be one of those, but it's so hard to see that as a parent. When your kid's giving you the business and you're like, I've raised you, I love you, I don't deserve what you're, why is it, where's this coming from? And being able to step back far enough and still love them enough to go, it's a phase. I got to be able to see this perspective. It's not a reflection on me. It's a reflection on what they're going through, you know, and it's hard to look at people that way, but it's the truth. And like, I'm the number one failure at stuff like that is being able to put other people's stuff in perspective. And Ben says it all the time. He always says, you know, the last thing that someone said to me, I take that brush and I paint their whole life with it. You know, if they were a jerk with me one time out of 20, I'm like, that guy's a jerk. You know, like, he always acts this way. He doesn't always act that way. He did it one time and I'm taking it way out of context. And, you know, and like, I think a lot of raising kids, is just like that, is realizing who you've raised them to be, what you've consistently taught them, and where they're varying. And the varying is not their new identity.
New normal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry for pushing you, by the way. I don't normally push.
Yeah, that's kind of your gig, Wagner. Yeah. Welcome to the John Wagner Show. Let's finish up the last bit of secular fights here. Oh, man. Hold on. I got caught up in some kind of weird app storm where I can't get out. Here we go. Secular says, people do not grow up instantly. Secular disagrees. I know individuals who are immature at 50.
What?
And I'm sure if you think about it, so do you. From what you have told me about your daughter, it's clear that she is far from grown up, as she thinks she is. If you do not want Gwen to date until she is older, that is your prerogative as her parent. The gender of the person isn't the issue. Because you think she's hanging out with the wrong crowd, my advice is to make sure she is so busy she doesn't have time to spend with them. Involve her in activities outside of school, sports, scouting, music, or art, and be sure she knows that you are her forever mother and that nothing she could ever do will lessen your love for her. I agree with the last part.
All right, you're listening live from the Path. You can catch us during the week at liveofthepath.org. Sign up for the podcast. Check us out on Facebook. If you like the Facebook, you can get clips and stuff from the show. Hey, by the way, if you do that on Facebook, you have to ask to be notified of our posts, because otherwise Facebook tries to get you to pay for advertising and stuff, and we don't got no money. So you either got to frequent the page or get notified. I do the get notified. You can always change your mind later. It's a drunk decision. It's St. Patrick's Day. You can make poor decisions on the alcohol. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path.